Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, I'm Steve Sutherland and welcome to the fifth and final podcast of this exclusive series where we've been chatting to Charlton legend Keith Peacock. Keith and I both being ambassadors of Charlton Athletic Community Trust. And thank you very much indeed for those of you who have donated to the Trust, because it's so much appreciated. The Trust, as we've said before in these programmes, are really working hard, playing an essential part in supporting the Greenwich Community Hub for residents of Greenwich who might be struggling, might be vulnerable. So they're delivering food parcels, they're collecting prescriptions and providing other support. So as well as all the other work that goes on, CACT is still very much playing its role in the community. So your donations have been much appreciated, and we'll give you the link for you to make a donation at the end of this one as well. So in the past series, we've been talking to Keith about his career from starting as a 17-year-old all the way through his playing career, his emigration to the States during the 80s, starting out as a manager in his own right at Gillingham and Maidstone, reserve manager at QPR, then obviously coming back, and now where we left it was that we're in 2006 and Alan Kirbishley had decided to move on in his career, and he got clapped off the pitch in a guard of honour at the Blackburn game. His final game was at Man United. So let's say hello again to you, Keith. You're okay?
Hi, Steve. Yes, good to speak to you again.
And you, Keith. And these have been fascinating for me, so I hope you've been enjoying them as well, these reminiscences of yours. So let's pick it up from there then, Keith. Kerbs had gone. Nice clap off the pitch at Blackburn home game. Final game was quite fitting, really. It was at Old Trafford. Alan's future lay elsewhere. What did you see your future as doing at that point?
Well, I really thought it was going to be a time to get those golf clubs out. I think I'd already started to polish them a few days after. I'm thinking I'll have more time to do a bit of golf, because what happened was Kerbs left immediately after the Man United game. So did Mervyn. I was still at the club. And it was about a week or so afterwards, late that week, I spoke to Richard Murray, and we were talking about managers that could come in now that Kerbs had gone, all round things. And then really, I was feeling that the whole situation would be better if I made a break. And I spoke to Richard about that, said, look, I'm best making a break as well. Whoever comes in will have a clean sheet to start again.
And wouldn't you have fancied pitching for it, Keith?
Sorry?
Wouldn't you have fancied putting your hat in the ring for the job?
No, actually, I had no feelings about that. It was just, do I carry on and new people come in? And I thought we finished on such a great note with Kerbs and Mervyn, myself. We had such a successful time during that period. It's probably the right time to leave. And it gave also the board and Richard, who was head of things at the time, a clean sweep. So whoever came in could get their own assistant, their own first team coach, etc. And that's what was decided, so a fairly brief meeting. You know, we were speaking for 45 minutes, an hour. That was the outcome. And I was now, came home, had a word with Leslie, told her what the future is going to be. She was right behind that, happy to be having me at home. So
yeah. She
said.
Yeah. There's a comment there, Keith.
But within such a short time, it was a week or so later, a call from Alan Pardew changed all that.
And Alan was at West Ham, of course, at that time as manager. He'd been quite sought after as well. I think West Ham waited for him as well to take him, didn't they, from Reading?
Yes, indeed. He was on gardening leave. He did very well at Reading. Reading wouldn't let him go. They put him on gardening leave. He then got to West Ham and, of course, did ever so well. And they were in the cup final, just a few on that season before, the 2006 ending season. They got to the cup final, lost to Liverpool in the last game.
Yeah.
So they were in a very high situation, Pards was as well. And he just, it was a fairly short conversation in a way. He said, "You're too young to retire, I want you across here." And I thought about it and decided, yes, I was gone.
What was it? Because you said you'd sort of made up your mind to pick up your golf clubs. And you were synonymous with Charlton. Charlton had been a big part of your career. What was it? I mean, I know he's a persuasive devil, Alan, but what was it that made you decide, do you know what? I'm gonna go to West Ham.
It was put to me, as you say. Pards is can be very persuasive, is full of positive vibes. He was doing well, and he would allow me to have certain days off when necessary, which is part of the agreement. So I was pretty much full time, but a few little moments where I could get away myself.
What role had he identified for you, Alan, at West Ham?
He just said, "I want you there in the building, around the building, as coach. We'll just name you as coach, and I can be there advising, helping, taking sessions, and in an all-round capacity." Which I thought was, well, that's a perfect situation.
That's perfect, yeah. So at that point, I suppose you thought that was your Charlton career over, and you're now onto your West Ham.
Yes, and talking, I mean, this was going across, we'll just take it one season at a time, really.
Yeah.
And, great wrench to leave Charlton. I mean, you can imagine. So many years there. However, you get used to kind of moving on to the next direction. And instead of the golf course, it was at West Ham, and quite an interesting time was ahead of me.
It was. And on the books at the time were a couple of Charlton-connected players, weren't there?
Yes, Lee
Bowyer, of course.
Yes. So
it's funny, Keith, how paths cross backwards and forwards in football careers, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And he's doing so very well. And as we go into the season, and I went on tour with the team. Paths couldn't go, so it's myself and Peter Grant, who was the assistant manager, sort of in charge on that first get-together, as you could say, as we prepare for the season. And one player that stood out for me was a fellow called Dean Ashton. We had Teddy Sheringham coming to the end of his career. He must have been 41. Magnificent player still.
Yes.
He always said, he wasn't the quickest, but he didn't really lose any pace. He was always the same pace. Mm. When you get very quick flying wingers and they lose a bit of pace, you notice the difference. They're not quite successful. But his brain was superb, and he was excellent. However, Dean Ashton was the new Teddy Sheringham, a young one on the scene. And unfortunately, he got injured.
West Ham signed him from Norwich, didn't they, for a lot of money?
Yes, I don't know how much, but it was a big signing and a successful one as well.
And you know, I remember talking to you before about Dean Ashton, but you believe he would have gone on to have a hell of an England career, don't you?
I think he would have played a number of games. He could hold the ball up. He could score with either foot in the air. And he was powerful. And he was a team player. It was a tragedy. He was injured he got into the England squad, got an injury, and that he never recovered from. And of course, we never West Ham never recovered that season really from losing him.
No, because I suppose Alan and yourself and Peter Grant and Kevin King was there as well, wasn't he, at the time? I suppose you were just going to build your attack around Dean Ashton.
Yes, the object was Ashton was there as the main man up front, probably like Kurt Kermagamp was for us later on.
Yes.
In the years when Chris Powell was there at Charlton. And so that was the focal point, and things would go off him. And when he was injured, or if he tired or had a knock, the idea was always Teddy Sheringham comes on and never let the side down, a great experience. But that didn't happen. And
as an aside, Teddy Sheringham featured in Harry's Heroes last night, didn't he? The Harry yes. Redknapp, former players on tour last night.
That's right.
He still looks like he could play now.
Yes, absolutely.
Some players just have that natural, they can go on to older ages. In this series, we talked about Stanley Matthews playing an old age. But, I mean, Teddy Sheringham was he 40 then, Keith?
Yes, 40, coming up 41 he was. And he was
incredible.
Great condition. It was a lot of it was just this natural physique of power. He'd always work hard in the gym afterwards, after every session. I would do the same thing with him and go through with him on his routines. But he'd taper down in terms of the energy he spent during the midweek, during the training session.
Yeah. Now, that year at West Ham was an interesting year. It was an eventful year. I think we can call it that as well, can't we? Because there was a constant talk of takeover in the air at West Ham, wasn't there, around that time?
Yes, there was takeover bids, I think, going in a number of occasions for a number of weeks as well. It seemed to drag on. And Keir Turabian looked as though he may be coming in, either with a consortium or he himself involved, I thought, at one stage. But it was the Icelandic group, Magnusson, who actually took over.
Yeah, Eggert Magnusson, wasn't it?
That's correct, yes.
So but Keir Jurabchian, to use his... I apologise to him if I mispronounced that, but he was to play a role, though, because he made West Ham an offer they can't really refuse, didn't he?
Yes, we had the opportunity through him to actually get Tevez and Mascherano, who I had seen play firsthand when I went to
Buenos Aires.
So, two really good players, just getting into the full international side, and we could have them on a free transfer. Quite good wages, obviously, they would need.
Mm.
And Pars had to make that decision. Do I upset the team a little bit by bringing two foreign players in at that stage, because it was all British players who were playing for his team at that time and had done so successful. They were so successful. But what he did, he got the two players in and off we went into the new season. I think we just played a few games and then they came in.
Yeah. But Alan was a little bit reluctant to take them because of getting them into the team shape or because of the effect they might have on team morale or team structure.
Probably it was different. You had two players here that were they were free transfers, but they were worth a lot of money. So I don't know whether the wage scale, I would have thought, I didn't get involved in that, but it would automatically be lifted to accommodate them. And just a different way. They had never played in English football before.
Right.
And that can be very important.
So it's a bit echoes of Ardiles and Villa at Spurs a little bit.
Yes, you could say that. And they did magnificently. And it took a bit of time for... And don't forget, we weren't... Like, Tottenham were flying probably that year as well. We started off and life was a bit more difficult. We were in Europe. We played two games against Palermo before we lost. But that we didn't really need that at that stage. We're building ourselves up at West Ham at that stage to really do really what Charlton managed to do, stay middle of the table, have a cup run.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that, because it can stretch a team's resources playing in Europe, can't it?
It can. You played midweek and you played against some magnificent players in Europe, and then you're going to play, with no due respect, a Middlesbrough, Bolton and Blackburn, and they can just take the foot off, the players can take the foot off the pedal, and they can lose a game, or draw a game when they should be winning them.
But the season wasn't going too well. I don't think that that's early stage, certainly up until Christmas, but Tevez and Mascherano were actually setting the world alight, were they?
No, it was because we couldn't get the goals. The goals were missing. So, invariably, we're doing okay. Mascherano sits in that middle of midfield, in the protecting the back four. That was his role. He's always played. So, he's never going to get a goal. Tevez, hoping would get a goal, but it was fitting in exactly how we would play him. And he didn't speak any English at that time. And it wasn't quite, and we're missing that Ashton up front. So we lost a number of games, 1-0 or drew 1-1. And so we were struggling a bit. It wasn't quite happening.
No, I can imagine. And unfortunately, I mean, results didn't really pick up for Alan, did they? And the Christmas that year, I think it was, wasn't it? The board, under the new Icelandic owners, decided to make a managerial change.
Yes, it came about. There were rumours at the time. The crowd were very, pretty much behind Pars all the time in terms of the type of football he was playing. Always played, got the players playing, but very extravagant and always trying to attack. But, yeah, there was pressure on. We were working our way down the league. Probably Tevez hadn't quite got going, didn't quite fit in his best position. And not out of the blue, but it was a bit of a shock when I think it was just second week in December that amid rumours, I then had a phone call. Kurz was on the other end. He said, "I'm just letting you know, kid, I'm coming in tomorrow. We'll have a chat, see you there at whatever." We had a brief conversation about the players, etc. And I paddled up with Kurz again.
Which is quite, as I said, it's quite amazing how connections come go in your life. And but just before we say about Alan coming to West Ham, the club where he started his career, of course, Sven-Goran Eriksson was being linked at the time, I remember, with West Ham, John.
Absolutely. He was a favourite. Everyone was saying once Pars was sacked that Eriksson was coming in. So, I mean, I would have left there and then. And I actually said, "Oh, Pars, I'm leaving now. I've finished."
Yeah.
The sensible thing is, for any professional, you stay there and you just wait to see who walks through the door and then make that decision.
Yeah.
Which I did. And Kurz came in and took over a difficult situation because we were down there. I don't know, we were fairly near the bottom, but not sunk right at the bottom.
So in a way, you know, Blues Brothers speak, you reformed the band, didn't you? Because Mervyn Day came back,
yes.
Alan.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden, Kurbishley, Peacock and Day were back in harness again.
Yes.
West Ham.
Yes, it was so strange how that happened. And of course, not only that happened, but Pars was soon to go to Charlton.
Well, absolutely. But let's just quickly, before we talk about that, we'd already said it was at Christmas. But Alan's first game was Manchester United. And you beat them.
And we beat them 1-0. So, actually, looking at it, the last game Kirk was involved in was against Manchester United away, which we lost 4-0. And then his first game was Manchester United again. But at home this time, we won 1-0, so he got off to a nice start. Life after that became difficult for a few months, but that got him off to a great start. But he'd need to change things compared with the way Pards played. So he had a more solid way of playing as well.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously we're going to carry on with your career at West Ham, but we can't really over, as you've already alluded to, Alan Pardew was announced as Charlton's manager on Christmas Eve. So you've effectively done a bit of a job swap situation going there. So now Alan's ensconced at SE7. You, Alan, and Mervyn are still at West Ham, but the results kept going badly. And Alan, what was Alan's view on Tevez and Mascherano, Alan Kirbyshley?
With Tevez, to begin with, he was always a bit overweight, didn't particularly look the part as a player, especially compared with a lot of modern day shapes of footballers. He couldn't speak any English, so we had to have an interpreter there all the time. So it wasn't quite happening, but as we went on, certain things did happen. But if we can zip through the next couple of months where it became difficult to get good results, we weren't doing very well at all, sliding down the week. This is when I'm saying us now, I've had us at West Ham. And at the same time, Pards had kicked on with Charlton. They were doing very well.
Just the timeline this, Alan Kirbyshley's immediate successor at Charlton, of course, was Ian Dowie. That didn't last long. Les Reed came in as manager. That didn't last long. And that's when Charlton turned to Alan Pardew. So that sort of brought us up to speed with what's happening at the two clubs.
Yes.
There was a game that I don't think you enjoyed very much, did you, Keith, really, at your West Ham career, because Alan Kirbyshley's West Ham were playing Alan Pardew's Charlton at the Valley.
Who would have believed that a year previous?
Exactly.
I must admit, I just was not looking forward to the game. Coming back, sitting on the wrong side of the director's box.
Yeah.
I'd always mainly sit out there anyway. And the game for West Ham became a disaster. Pards was on a good run. And Jerome Thomas, could be an excellent player on his day, caused lots of trouble. So did Darren Bent. We lost 4-0, and that looked at that stage that Charlton were flying. Pars was turning it around, curve, and all of us were struggling to get a good result. And if that wasn't bad enough, that was one of the darkest days. We had the next week, we were at home, and West Ham played against Tottenham.
Yes.
And we were winning 3-2, which we thought, oh, a lifeline. There's a lifeline coming here. And they scored 2 in the last 5 minutes. We lost 4-3.
Yeah.
So you can imagine now, there's 9 games to go. And on paper, we need to win possibly 7. Win 7.
And you just let 8 goals in 2 matches.
Absolutely. It was, we were down. West Ham were relegated at that stage. There's
now,
no way.
We'd only time, won. Didn't Kerbs then turn to Tevez and also a young Mark Noble?
Yeah, big decision. We talked about it. that two things, that the two people the crowd loved during these difficult times at West Ham, they cheered Noble, who was a bit like Scotty Parker, you could say.
Yeah.
He was one of ours. He's come through the youth team. He wears his heart on his sleeve. And he was cheered all the time, every time he got a game. So he was in there. And he kept him in the heart of the midfield. And Tevez playing. And what we did, and pushed him further forward, rather than having him coming off and playing, just kept him the furthest man forward, and Zamora coming deep.
Bobby Zamora, yeah, cool.
Yeah, Zamora was, and Zamora played more of a holding up the ball, but he could get down the sides as well. And so, you know, it changed the system a little bit. He just tweaked it a bit, and I thought that made a big difference at that stage. And, well, as I say, the rest was incredible. The next game, we're really now down. We're 1-0 down against Blackburn in the very next game. And we, as I say, we've got to win 7 out of the next 9. We're 1-0 down. Here we go again. And then an amazing thing happens. Someone had a shot from a corner. Tevez was right on the line. And instead of jumping over it, he tried to jump over it and he cleared it off the line. It didn't go over the line. The linesman gave a goal. And we were 1-1. We didn't even put our arms out saying, oh, that's a goal for us. Nothing like that. He gave us a goal. So everyone just ran back and got on with it. And then we had a penalty that was never a penalty. Tevez took it. I think he got brought down, and it was a very dubious penalty. We won 2-1. It was a ludicrous result, really. But at least that, well, was still alive.
Yeah.
Then we won the next home game.
Well, I remember, I think it might have been the next game, but I mean, I remember watching it on Match of the Day. I mean, it was the proverbial, if it was a boxing match, it would have been stopped. But you won 1-0 at Arsenal.
Yeah, well, there you are. We played Middlesbrough, I think, in between 1-2-0. So that gave us a bit of confidence. Went to Arsenal. Noble made a few, as I've mentioned, Scotty Parker, Lee Bowyer type tackles to get the crowd revved up, the smaller crowd, obviously, the West Ham supporters. And then Zamora scored, it was in the second half, I think, And it was a terrific goal. But it's the only time we really had a shot at goal. In fact, the fans were chanting, "We've only had one shot." 1-1-0, and that after that, I think we won the next 6 after that. We may have lost one game in between.
Well, I mean, basically, the Tevez Mascherano rescue act, but then that caused West Ham an awful lot of problems, didn't it? Because you did stay up that season, sadly. Over at SE7, Alan was unable to keep Charlton up, and Charlton went down.
Yes, I mean, it was such a reversal of the situation since we've played them. We've played against Charlton. It's difficult to say when I'm using we. I use we.
Yeah, I know, and I'm saying Alan a lot, and of course there's two Alans.
And there's two Alans, just a complicated info. Then after that game, we soon started to go up and get in touch with the safety. And of course, Pars was slipping down with Charlton that year. We had to go to Man United away. They have to go to Charlton, go to Liverpool.
Liverpool. Yes.
Two easy games for both sides, really.
Of course.
We got an amazing 1-0 win. And then heard on the radio that Liverpool had won 2-1. And so there was a complete reversal of what seemed to be the obvious fortunes of both the clubs.
So, obviously, everyone knows that the arguments about the rights and wrongs of the transfer of Tevez and Mascherano and third-party ownership, and that ended up in a massive row, legal row with Sheffield United. But what was, so you've come to the end of the season, you'd stayed up. against the odds, West Ham had stayed up. Sadly, Charlton had gone down, but you, West Ham, where you were, had stayed up. Now, what's Alan? What now? What's Keith Peacock thinking at that time?
Well, I'd put off my retirement really the year before, and now it was time to come out and really give a bit more time to life at home. It had been an incredible finish at West Ham, but I'd gone there. It was always going to be more short term going there. And Gerbs had a build again on what he'd got going. And that was the time for me to go into what would be proper retirement and say goodbye to any coach, you know, managerial roles.
Did Kerbs try and make you change your mind?
We had a chat, and it was good for both of us. It was fine. I just felt it was right. I think it was right for both Kerbs' situation, my situation, and we had. I had to start afresh, and having time to myself, and really get on the golf course, which I did.
Yes.
I managed to get my handicap down from 24 to 15.
I'd comment if I knew what that meant. I mean, I'm not being a golfer, but sounds good, Keith.
Yeah, it's not really. It's right.
Okay, so you've had 1 year at West Ham. That was unexpected. You'd worked with two of your former colleagues previously, Charlton colleagues. It's quite a strange story in a way, isn't it? So your year at West Ham started with Alan Pardew, ended with Alan Kerbishley. Now you think you're starting life on the golf course. And now talk to me now about how Charlton came back on the radar, Keith.
Yes, well, when I left with that conversation with Richard Murray at the time, it was kind of... I don't know if it was mooted, but perhaps, right, I need to come out of the game, enjoy myself a little bit more in a relaxed atmosphere, have more time at home, and then perhaps it will be an opportunity to come back to Charlton in a different role.
Yeah.
I hoped, in a way, that may happen further down the line. But now we've gone further down the line by one season, and I had a call from Peter Varney on behalf of Richard Murray and the board at that time.
Yeah.
About a couple of months before the next season began, to come aboard at Charlton as an honorary associate director, which was just perfect. I said, absolutely, it's my privilege and pleasure to get back to my spiritual home.
Right. So for the third time, you're back at Charlton.
Yes, indeed.
In your career.
I've done a hat trick there.
Yeah. And back at Charlton, and Alan Pardew's manager still at Charlton.
Yes, Alan was manager there, very same bubbly character, but it didn't quite happen for him, and it can happen to a number of managers, but perhaps he just... Didn't get it going the right way. There were different things that probably happened at the club, of letting players go and not letting them go, or whatever it was. But he, after a season, I think it was or so, he was fired by the board, and Phil Parkinson came in. But Parks, up until then, I think it had a very good record as a manager, but at Charlton it didn't happen. He'd be the first to admit that.
And Phil Parkinson had been his coach, his number two, of course.
Yes, very good, honest, straightforward man, steady, you know, a real sound sort of character, and someone I couldn't help but like from the off, you know, and part of a lot of him as well.
So, Keith, football fans hear a lot about, associate directors and things like that, but how did you see your role at this time? You had Phil wasn't an inexperienced manager because he'd managed Colchester, hadn't he?
Yes.
How was your role used as associate director at that time?
It was mainly at, for the next year or two, whatever it was, that I'd be there, I'd be in the boardroom, go to away games, not all the away games, but certain away games, meet up with the board of directors there, or what directors came, Richard Murray would be at most games, and then home games, I would be in the boardroom, and it was good for Richard would often ask me to, if he wasn't going to get there early, if I could be there before him and chat to the opposite directors and different personalities that came in there. So it was perfect from that point of view. At the training ground, I'd pop by now and again, and I was always there if anyone wanted to have a general chat. But there was it was more of that, not an ambassadorial role at that point, but in with the directors of talking with and to the opposition when they came to the ground, and also keeping in touch with the manager himself.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, am I right in saying similar sort of role that Derek Ufton would have played?
Yes, perhaps more on those lines, you know, where you talk to the present day manager, whoever he may be.
The view from the dressing room type thing for the board.
Yes, but more detached. Yes. You know, much more detached. But being a younger oldie in those days, it was probably a nice position to have for the club, hopefully, and certainly for me because I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Now, sadly, you'd gone back to the club at a time when a mixture of finances and bad form, and we were slipping. Our status as in football was slipping practically year on year. And sadly, Phil couldn't turn the tide. And I remember that season, we went a huge amount of games without a win. Something like 17 or 18 games from the top of my head, I think it was. And we were relegated to League One.
Yeah.
And you were still in your associate director role at that point.
Yes, well, obviously, a sad time for being in that lower division, and like the fans would feel, we need to get back up there as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Well, this is where your role possibly changes slightly again, because there's been a change of ownership, I think. I'm right in saying, I mean, that's the time when the club changed hands, Jimenez, Slater, and Charlton turned to another Charlton legend, and Chris Powell became the manager.
Yes. Chris came in. Phil, what happened, we'd had new owners come in.
Yeah.
And Tony Jimenez and Michael Slater were chairman and head of things, and it became... I think I'm just trying to work out when they actually came in, but anyway, before Christmas, they'd come in. We were about fifth in the league, I think, at the time, but of course, we were expected to do better. We lost at home to Swindon, something like 4-5-2, and on that evening, and I was completely out of the blue because I didn't expect this to happen. And Tony Gymner's, I think he was pretty much in charge of the sacking at that time, I would think, as the head man in many ways. Anyway, Phil was sacked, Kinsella went, Breaker went, and so there was no one that, there was no one left there really to guide the ship.
I was going to say, you found yourself, which must have been a lovely thing for you, Keith. You know, you found yourself as caretakers, use that word, manager of Charlton. Powley was on his way in. He hadn't joined at that stage. And there were two matches that you took charge of.
Yes. Obviously, what happened, I was asked whether I'd be willing to take over just for a game. Mm. I didn't even know who we were playing in the next game, actually, then. And I remember speaking to Peter Varner and saying, well, what's the game? We've got Tottenham in the cup next away. And I'm telling you, Tottenham were flying. The foe was on fire. Modric, it was a team to be feared.
Yeah.
Well, in all fairness, I'd love to have stepped in when I was younger and that. to be Charlton manager at any stage, just temporarily. But I had to think about this one, but really, someone had to move up. Damien Matthew was taking the youth team, and what happened, I took over for what turned out to be two games. And the first one being against Tottenham away, and of course, I've had to go into the training ground and have a talk with the players, and the difficulty is often when a manager gets sacked, he can be quite, maybe a lot of players are disgruntled.
Yeah.
Phil was very popular, and I had to kind of have a little shake-up in terms of our mental approach to the game that was coming up, and I was just prepared to take that one game, and Tony at the time assured me that by the time that game was over, he would have a manager in place. And it was great going there to Tottenham.
Well, you were against Harry Redknapp, weren't you?
Harry Redknapp. And of course, Harry's great. I have a chat with him before the game. I've got to the bench, and they're lovely seats. You could sit there and watch TV. Lovely soft seats, big arms there, armchairs they were. And I had Damien with me, and I said to Damien, you get up and do the shouting and yelling if you need to, or instructions coming out from him on the area.
Yeah.
The area for the coach. And I sat down, and I think there was only one other person on our big bench, and that was our physio at the time, Errol. I've looked across at Harry and went across just to shake hands with him. And he's got everyone there. He's got Jordan. He's got Les Ferdinand, I think, was on the bench.
Kevin Bond?
Kevin Bond, of course. There were so many, I couldn't count them. I just said, look, this is just look at the benches here. I've got one physio, and you've got seven coaches and assistant managers. Can I borrow some? But he wouldn't let me have them. But the end of the game, we did terrific. We were doing all we could. It was 0-0 at half time. But one thing happened at half time. And here's a player I love. Modric had been rested for the game because they thought they must have enough strength to beat Charlton in lower division side at the time. But they weren't doing that. It was 0-0. On came Modric. And the utmost glory were crushed as the Charlton fans. We lost 3-0, but in a very, I think, good way. And the fans clapped us off at the end.
Yeah, I remember you gave a really good account of yourselves as Charlton Athletic, first division team, then League One team, playing against the Giants, Spurs. It was a great performance. But you had one more game after that then, Keith.
I did. I was told that was it. And then on the Monday, Tony and Michael said we're going to have a meeting and get a new manager, who was a manager that did very well in later, but not with Charlton. It didn't take place, and it seemed as though it would. And so I was asked, could I take one more game and give us more time to get the manager? And it was not until the Friday night, we were playing Sheffield Wednesday, and it was about the Friday night when it was nailed down that Chris Powell would come in. So that was great.
Chris had been Pearson's coach and Sven-Göran Eriksson's coach, hadn't he?
Yes.
At Leicester.
Yes, this would be his first actual managerial post. So, but I was in charge for one league game. And we've gone 2-0 up at Sheffield, who were a really strong side then. And it's looking fantastic. And I'm thinking, well, Chris, I'm going to have to stay here. No. But the bench, I was up in the director's box, as I like preferred watching the game there always. And unfortunately, we drew 2-2 in the end, but it gave me a chance to clap the fans that has come along, the faithful away fans, and they gave me a lovely send-off for my final game. So I was undefeated in the league, but not a particularly good cup run.
No, but it sort of finished off your... You must have been proud of yourself that you became Charlton manager eventually.
Yeah. It was. Funnily enough, when we talk about being manager, and there was obviously that chance back at the beginning of the 90s of a return in that role, but it worked out well for me.
Yes,
personally,
yeah.
Because I've had this longevity with the club, which is quite... almost unique, you could say, and it was probably through not being a manager, because being a manager, you're going to go at some stage. But anyway, that was the end of my foray as manager.
But your role slightly changed again, because I think what we'd like to do, before we wrap up our final interview today, is obviously talk about that fantastic year that Chris Powell had, getting us back into the Championship. But your role changed again.
Yes, Chris asked me if I would be prepared to stand in an advisory capacity, just being there probably a couple of days a week, sometimes three, coming in on the morning. Not doing any coaching as such. I think I put one or two little minor sessions on, but I'd come away from it completely now. And yes, I said I was prepared to do that. Chris was a great fella, and hopefully I was someone in the background there that could always help us at most games, certainly all the home games. I'd be in the dressing room. And Chris did exceptionally well to begin with, tough for the first 4 months. After a good start, we won two or three games on the trot, and then things kind of evened out a bit and we didn't do that well. And in the summer, it was a huge thing in the summer. I think we got about 15 of the 16 players, new players in.
Yeah, so Keith, 15 players, it must have been around that sort of number, was a huge turnaround and huge change of the squad to clearly... doing one job, get us back up the league.
Yes, I hadn't known anything quite like this at the end of it, any one season, wherever I had been, when we needed to get so many players in. And the list is incredible, really, when you look back. Ben Hamer came in as a goalkeeper. We had Bradley Wright Phillips, Scotty Wagstaff, was a young fella coming through, Danny Holland from Bournemouth, along with Rose Wiggins, who was an outstanding left back at the time. Morrison came in the centre half.
Johnny Jackson came back permanently, didn't he?
Yeah, John Jackson, was he on loan before? I don't know.
He was on loan under Phil Parkinson, wasn't he? Yeah. But then whether he came in that year, I'll bow to your knowledge. But
yeah, he was certainly in the earlier in the season. but he could have been alone. Yeah, so he's become full-time and a big influence. He was going to be Gary Stevens, Bradley Pritchard. Solly came into the reckoning as well.
That was Chris Solly's breakthrough season, really, wasn't it?
That's what happened. And it was where he was the right back for all that, what proved to be a fantastic.
Well, if you look at some of these names, I'm just now looking at the list. And Andy Hughes.
Yes.
What a character.
Great character. Great to have in the dressing room. Inspirational. Coming to the end of his career, but everyone loved him.
Absolutely. And then you had the Michael Morrison and Matt Taylor, rocks at the back, didn't you?
Yes.
And Dale Stevens, what a good player, though.
Yes, Dale Stevens. Ball player. Chrissy Bell loved Stevens.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd look and think, oh, maybe you should have done this or picked up there. And Chris did exactly the right thing. He would give him that extra license to make that winning pass, and he could score a goal as well. And he gave us an extra edge in that midfield. But also a man came in by the name of Jan Kermigan.
Well, Jan came in a little bit through the season, didn't he? He came in not right at the start of the season.
Not right at the start, no. That was a later one to add to a formidable list of new players coming into the building, you could say.
Well, he formed an immediate, fantastic partnership with Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yes, and Jan was a superb, he was a very good all-round player. As a full-back, when you got the ball, you knew which way he was going to go, come short, go long, go to the side. Very powerful, and one of the best headers of the ball the club has seen.
You know, we in the last episode, we talked about legends and we talked about George Costa becoming a legend. Well, yeah. Jan did, didn't he? Jan, what an incredible season he had for us.
Yes, the crowd just loved him, and rightly so. He could change the game, scored some magnificent goals, had a big influence on the team. And Chris said to me, he said, Keith, I'm bringing this fella in. He said, you'll love him because he's got such great heading power, and I think he can do well. But he didn't work out for him at Leicester when he had him at Leicester. We're getting him on a free transfer. And of course, as you could say, the rest is history. From a free transfer, we ended up selling him for $500,000, and that was a bargain.
Well, yes, it was. It was a big blow to Charlton fans when he left. I mean, he's an incredible player. But that season under Chris Powell and Dyer as well, Alex Dyer as well.
Alex Dyer did a great job. His right-hand man there. Ben Roberts was a goalkeeping coach.
That's right.
Damien was about as well as the extra man taking the reserves and also the first team as at different times. So we had a nice, strong...
But it was a squad, and it was added to at the right time as well, with players like Leon Cort, I remember.
Vital, that was. And he had to wait months before he could get in the side because he kept winning. Then Taylor took a knock, and he came in, and I think he was finished the season in the side. I'm not sure if you look back on that one. But that was vital. He played a great role and great character, and the atmosphere. He kept the atmosphere of the whole club going as well.
What? When did you realise that you built a special side, Keith? You guys at the club then. When did you realise that this might become a hell of a good season for us?
Yes, it soon was unfailing. Really. As we were going along, Kurt, once Jan came, I think that was a key. It's a key. I mean, Bradley Wright Phillips scored lots of goals to begin with, and then he went a little bit dry, and then scored again towards the end, if my memory serves me correct. And Yeah, I think it was Kermigan when he came in and made that little bit of an extra difference.
Yeah, but the bringing in players at the right time is a crucial part of management, isn't it, Keith?
It is, as it was when we go back to the playoff days, when we brought Yowes and Mills in to bolster the team at that stage, and Sasha came in as well.
Yes.
So it's a new burst of enthusiasm, and if they're good players, they can give you the extra thrust forward. But we were flying. It was an incredible season. We just kept playing good football. We had defended well, got forward well. We scored 103. We got 103 points, didn't we?
101 points, yeah. Incredible.
Yeah, I like to exaggerate when I
guess. Yeah. You're allowed.
No, that was just incredible. And strangely enough, I'd been coming in for the last sort of half a dozen games or so, or even more. And many of the fans, we've got to win today, we've got to win. Well, you could just enjoy the game today because we were in such a strong position. But even so, everyone was nervous still until we got over the line and eventually became champions. It was a magnificent all-round thing. And talking about getting the players, I've got to probably mention Peter Varney here.
Yes.
Who acted as a great go-between the board of Tony Jimenez in particular, would be down at the ground quite a bit, with him and Chrissy Powell, enabling him to get the players. The lists were made down, passed on to Peter, and he would do a lot of scout work to help get this team together. So,
And I know that an awful lot of the players were signed early in the close season. Get your business done quickly. I know that was the Charlton style.
Yes.
Certainly Peter's style at that time. And how important is that to actually get your transfer targets, get them in place early in the close season?
Yes, we made lists of, we'd get in the office together there and the list would be made of order of preference. Now, you know what I'm saying, you may have got number three or number four on the list as it goes, but we did it quite quickly. And they worked out well. Everyone had a little bit of an input. Chrissy Powell, Ben Roberts as well, Damon and Alex Dyer. They all put what players they could put forward they felt we should get. And Peter, it pains me to keep praising him because it's something I don't enjoy doing. It worked well. It was a perfect situation, that. And we got a lot of our number one people in because we did it so easily. As that season finished, straight in, got it done as much as we possibly could.
I remember you used to have a board up on your office there with players in each position, target players, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, we'd have that, and obviously some would be crossed off. And then with those there, we want the ones that we right at the top of the list. And then quickly, if they go out the window, if number one goes out, we go to number two, or someone else comes from the side. It's an interesting situation when you can almost start from scratch.
Well, absolutely. And it was an incredible year for Charlton Athletic. We're back up. We got back into the championship. But did your role continue as the sort of football advisor, football consultant?
Yes.
Type? Did that continue there?
That continued into the... We got promotion, we had the next season, we came...
Nine, something like that?
Yeah, very respectable. Continuing. We look as though, we're back to the old Charlton now. This is going to establish ourselves in the championship. And then we had a change of ownership.
Yes.
And that was just before Christmas, if I'm correct, just before Christmas. Right, a vital time because we're now looking to sign players for the future that are already at the club, like Yan and a few others, and also to try and get players in. And that kind of got messy and things didn't happen perhaps the way we were hoping. But the new owners were there. They're going to do it their way, which any new owners that come in will do things the way they want because they've got the right to it to a degree. And it was very, very unfortunate, probably what happened into March, I think we were, and Chris was sacked.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very disappointing because Chris was very, very popular and they've done a great job.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that was a fairly short period. Chris, already a legend as a player, became a legend as a manager for what he did there.
Absolutely.
We went into a new era where it was stable in many ways, and certainly financially and everything. And then we went through a number of managers came and went fairly quickly, you could say, after that.
Yes, I mean, you know, we're coming to the end of our series now, Keith. But it was a bit of a merry-go-round at that time. Jose Riga came in, followed by Bob Peters. And Damien had a go as well, didn't he? I think Damien held the fort. Your assistant at Spurs.
Yes.
First game. I think he had a match or so in
Spurs. At Watford, yes. And he just came back. I think Luzon.
Luzon.
He was coming in. It was actually at the game and he was going to take over. So Ben Roberts and Damien were going for that one time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a period that lots have been said about, but we will move forward because if you read out the list of managers there, you might want to put not calling it St John's at the end of that. I think it's... Riga, Peters, Matthew, Luzon, Freya, Riga again. Russell Slade came in. Kevin Nugent had a go. Carl Robinson came in, obviously. But Carl Robinson brought Lee Bowyer back.
And it turned out to be a terrific... I think Bo was just around the place to begin with and saying he was happy to be coaching and in with it and... And then the rest becomes history now. Bo came in, Carl went to Oxford after a number of months and had his chance to go there. He went, Bo took over, and the job he did in that time to the end of the season and the next season was absolutely incredible.
Assisted by Johnny Jackson, of course.
Johnny Jackson was marvellous at doing all the work with the players and young. Enthusiastic to join in any session at any time, as Bo was still very fit and still
yeah.
So he can show some of the young players and some of the older players what to do, and he can put it into action as well, which is always nice.
But, so Keith, as we come to the end of this, let's just get your perspective on the job Lee Bowyer did, particularly at Johnny Jackson last year, culminating in that incredible day at Wembley.
Yes, and the goalkeeper and coach Marshall should be mentioned. A number of people behind the scenes as well.
Yes.
Brett, who's done so well, Brett Shaw, on the analyst side. But, yeah, no, it was a magnificent achievement because we sold Ahern Grant at a time when we would be hoping to get someone in. But,
yes,
like often happens at many, many clubs, we had to let him go, and yet we still managed to fight on, fill the gaps that had happened with other players, and the team kept going. The spirit was magnificent, and that.
Well, getting Lyle Taylor in was important, wasn't it?
Yes, Lyle Taylor was exceptional. At Charlton, sorry, the best he's ever done at any club beforehand, although he was showing stuff at Wimbledon that he could be a bit of a handful. Now he came to Charlton. It was a great move for him and, of course, an exceptional move for us to get him to lead the line, scored so many goals, assisted in so many, a real character out of the field. And then we got to Wembley and, you know, what a fairly exciting game.
Well, fairly, yeah. But I also think we should mention how brilliant Lee, Johnny, and the club were at that time in playing the loan transfer market. Because
yes.
The quality of the players we brought in that season was unbelievable. I mean, Josh Cullen, Christian Bielik. I mean, these players had massive influence on the season, didn't they?
Yes. So usually you have to pay money, you know, good money to get players like that in. Steve Gallen, obviously behind the scenes, was doing a terrific job and tying up with the manager, Bo, and the rest. And he was getting players in there, helping to get players in. And Bo himself was getting players in of a real quality. And you can see that, straight away you can see what Bo likes in a player. This, they've got to be effervescent, they've got to be hard-working. Otherwise, they don't last too long at all. And we've got players in there that just lift up. And normally you'd have to pay big money to get that sort of player. But it worked out superbly. And of course, fans said, another great day in the final.
So, Keith, we're drastically running out of time now. It's been a fantastic series. We could talk for hours and hours and hours more, because you're still so influential around the club on a match. Everyone sees you on a match day. You've now got your own lounge there. Mind you, you're working your way through the stadium in terms of named lounges, I think. Can I just get your view on where on football now? I mean, obviously this is a very, very difficult time. It's never been known before where football's just been halted like this. Sport has been halted. It would be, in my opinion, it would be terrible if league status up or down is decided by a formula. I wonder what you think.
Well, I totally agree with that. One thing it shouldn't be decided is by a formula. We've just gone through some history at West Ham. Nine games to go. Actually, there's nine games to go in this season for us.
Exactly.
West Ham won seven of that nine against teams at the top of the league, and so it goes. Other teams dropped from nowhere. I can relate to with the time we've mentioned in 1972. We had 10 games to go. We lost eight and drew two.
Yes.
And went down. So yes. These things are always there that the computer, you can't put them through a computer.
No. And we were only in the bottom three a few days before the lockdown.
Yes. It was the last game that actually put us into the bottom three for the very first time.
I mean, it's a difficult scenario. I mean, my stance on it, Keith, is if you can finish the season somehow, that's preferable. If it's not possible, then I just think you've got null and voided. I honestly don't see formulas. You'll have legal disputes forever.
Yes, no, I agree with you. I think it's very difficult. I'm glad I'm not having to be in the position.
Yeah, well, so am I, yes.
As so many things in the country at the moment, the top people from the Prime Minister to the football fraternity at the top, very, very difficult to sort these out. And let's hope they do what is right and what turns out to be the right thing. And
hopefully
have a fair crack.
I think so. And let's hope that the situation at Charlton settles down, because Lee Bowyer and Johnny Jackson and et al, they've proved how good they are, and with a fair wind, you know, I'm sure Charlton could do even better, because we know the potential's there. We've discussed it over these course of these weeks. We know the potential is there. We've been in the Premier League and as an established club. So let's just hope it all settles down soon. Football gets back. Charlton get back to winning ways, and the journey will continue.
Well, certainly hope so. And obviously, having been at Charlton for, I don't know how many years of my life, 55 to 60 years of my life, I tend to be optimistic, and something will always come up, hopefully, to be the right thing. Someone will come up with the right formula, etc. And I, all I can say is a big thank you for all the Charlton fans who have changed probably through the years. With their granddads and dads who were watching me from those early years, as I've talked about the career. And, you know, we've had terrific years and the ups and downs. Hopefully we'll have a lot more ups in the future.
Well, I hear here because, you know, Charlton's such a resilient club, and the fans are so resilient and so clever. The fans are clever as well. And I just feel this is a big club waiting to explode again. And I just hope we all get good news on the end of this season front and on the situation, the ownership of the club, and move forward positively together. But Keith, this has been an absolute pleasure for me. We've known each other a long time, but please pick your brains and get your reminiscences. It's been an absolute delight for me. So thank you very much indeed for all your time. And I hope you've enjoyed it as well, Keith.
No, I've very much enjoyed it. It's so good going down memory lane. There are so many things that I haven't been able to talk about.
Of course.
Hopefully it would be funny. Even the fact that help from you, actually. But I got my dream of playing at Wembley.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, Keith.
I was 52. But
yeah, your legs have gone, Keith, but I still picture.
They hadn't gone as much as the other legs that were around me.
No.
Bradley Walsh and Bob Boulder, different ones. But different things happen. In this life, you just don't know what's in store, and in football in particular. But I'm just grateful and very thankful for to be able to reminisce over a long period of time that has so many eventful and very enjoyable moments. And thank you, Sidney. Good talking to you.
No, thanks, Keith. And as we said, Keith and I are both very proud ambassadors of Charlton's Trust. So, and I know lots of you have been making donations, and it is really appreciated. So can I ask you one more time, if you've enjoyed these, and I know you have, if you've enjoyed these, then you would feel like making a donation to CACT, particularly at this time when they're doing such important work in the community, as they always do, but even at this time, please go to make a donation via cact.org.uk/donate. Keith, it's been a pleasure. I'll see you anon, and thanks ever so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.